something behind the complaints. There's some need on their part. And in thinking about it, I think what our parents need is sometimes respect. You know, they're getting older. They may not be working. They may not be needed so much in the family. But they need respect for their life, for their accomplishments, for what they've given, for how they've brought us up. And I think they may need some love and appreciation as well. So often if somebody is complaining and they have these needs, if we can meet the needs and show them respect, express our appreciation, show them love, that could fulfill their need, and then they may not be complaining anymore. You know? So it's interesting to think, you know, when somebody's complaining, there's some kind of emotional need behind that. And sometimes when people express some fear too, if we can see what is the need behind that, it can be very helpful. I remember some years ago when my mother was still alive, and she was talking to me and my sister-in-law and saying that she was worried about going blind and, you know, not being able to see things and go places. And I just said, "Oh, Mom, don't worry about that. You're not going to go blind." Yeah. It didn't help her at all. My sister-in-law said, "We'll take care of you. Yeah. We'll take care of you if you need help." And instantly my mother changed. And I realized, you know, what she needed was just reassurance that if she needed help, she would receive it. What I said didn't help her at all, just telling her, "Oh, you're making up something, you know, that'll never happen." So, you know, it's interesting to stop and kind of ask ourselves sometimes, what is it that people need? And if we can say that, then it really helps them to settle down. Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about refuge and precepts, even though nobody asked about it, because I figured maybe tomorrow somebody would. It's a ceremony that you do where you basically repeat after somebody, you know, that you take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and the Sangha. And then it's also an opportunity to take some or all of the five precepts. So when we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the Dharma is the main refuge because the Dharma is the last two of the four noble truths, true cessations and true paths. When we can actualize true cessations and true paths in our own mind stream, then we're liberated. So that's the real refuge. Then we see the Buddha as the one who teaches and guides us so we can actualize the Dharma. And we see the Sangha as the ones who support us. Here, when we're talking about the Sangha we take refuge in, we're talking about Arya beings, those beings who have realized directly the ultimate nature of reality. So we take refuge in the three jewels, and then you can decide for yourself prior to the ceremony how many of the five precepts you want to take. If you can take all five, it's wonderful. If you don't feel ready to do that, then take the ones that you do feel ready. So the five are, first of all, to not kill. So, of course, not killing human beings, but also animals, insects, and so forth. The question comes up about vegetarianism here, and according to the party line, you, or know that it was killed especially for you, then they say it's okay to eat it. However, my thought on the issue is, if there's demand, then there's supply. So if there's people who want to eat meat, then there will be people who kill it. So I don't think that, you know, that can be entirely karma-free. So as much as you can be vegetarian, it's good. If you can't, do what you're capable of. Okay? But that being vegetarian isn't included in that first precept. It's just recommended. Second precept is not to take what hasn't been freely given. So, you know, not to steal people's things. And including if you work at a company, using company property for your own personal use, you know, taking money that belongs to the company and putting it in your own bank account, etc., etc. Third one is to abandon unwise and unkind sexual behavior. So the chief thing is adultery. If you're within a relationship, going with somebody who's out another person, or even if you're single, going with somebody who's in a relationship. And this this precept also pertains to having safe sex when there's the possibility of sexually transmitted diseases, and also of not using people for our own enjoyment without taking their emotions into consideration. Then the fourth precept is to abandon lying. Now, many people in Singapore tell me that their employer wants them to lie, or their boss wants them to lie, and they wonder what to do. So I think you just say, I'm sorry, I don't feel comfortable speaking like that, and I don't think it's good for the business. Because the bottom line is, if you lie to clients and customers, they're not going to come back. If you tell them the truth, and you don't treat them, mistreat them or cheat them, they will come back and they'll tell you their friends that you're a reliable company. And then the fifth one is not taking intoxicants. So here that means cigarettes, alcohol, recreational drugs, and abuse of prescription drugs. So using prescription drugs in the proper way, certainly you need to take your meds, but misusing those drugs is, you know, an infringement of the precept. Okay, so you can choose which of those that you want to take. And choosing and taking refuge also completely optional. Nobody is forced to do it, or, you know, it's a personal decision. Okay, then I thought, because we don't have so much time, that I'd just continue with the questions. And then tomorrow I want to talk about the results of karma and maybe give you some situations in which we can create karma, because it's quite helpful to think about. Okay, so how does dedication of merit help others if they themselves do not perform virtuous deeds? Difficult, isn't it? Yeah. I'm assuming that the merits dedicated to others acts like a cooperative condition for their own positive seeds to ripen. Yes, that's correct. You know, it acts as a cooperative condition, and it's like, you know, sending good energy so their own virtuous karma can ripen. But they have to do the positive actions. And that's why, you know, people always say, how can I help my relatives? And I say, help them before they die. You know, don't just chant after they're dead, but encourage them while they're alive. mid-20s when they're angry and saying unpleasant, hurting words to each other. Both of them have bad tempers. Well, I think one thing is to say to them, it really hurts me to see two people I care about speaking harshly to each other. Yeah. So tell them how their behavior affects you. Because saying don't get angry and be patient, they're not going to listen. But if you say it really pains me, because I care about both of you, to hear you talking like that to each other. Yeah. I really need harmony. That's one thing. The other is just excuse yourself and leave. And tell them it hurts me, you know, to hear you talking like this. So please excuse me accordingly. It's difficult. What are you going to do? Are they going to listen to you? Maybe you can get working with anger. Put it on the coffee table now and say, both of you, read this. But I must say, sometimes leaving a Dharma book lying around the house can be beneficial because people won't go get it, buy it, the book themselves. But if it's just sitting around, they may pick it up at some time or another. How do we know the difference between self-centeredness and a sense of self? Isn't a sense of self also important? Yeah, His Holiness Dalai Lama talks about if you're going to be a bodhisattva, someone who aspires for full awakening for the benefit of all beings, you have to have a sense of self in the sense of having self-confidence. Okay? So, you have to have a strong mind and a confident mind to really practice the path. But that strong, confident mind is very different than being self-centered. Self-centered is my happiness is more important than everybody else's. And my suffering hurts more than anybody else's. Okay? So a confident, optimistic sense of self is very different than a greedy, self-centered attitude. Okay. What is throwing karma? And within the four karmas you mentioned, which is the throwing karma? What I mentioned before, those were four principles that apply to karma. They weren't four different types of karma. There were four principles that describe how our actions produce results. Throwing karma, in particular, is a type of karma, and it's the karma that throws us or propels us into the next rebirth. So it's the karma that at the time of death ripens and makes us attracted to one type of body, whether we're going to be, which one of these six realms we're going to be born into. Throwing karma is the one that ripens and determines that or influences that. Okay. Completing karma is the karma that completes that rebirth in the sense of influencing other circumstances in our life. So, for example, a virtuous throwing karma may ripen in our having a human rebirth, but completing karma will make you be born in Singapore or in South Africa or in Iraq or wherever. Completing karma will influence whether you're tall, you're going to be tall or short, these kinds of things. Okay? So other circumstances in your life. karma have a direct impact on whether one will be reborn into a human or animal realm? If so, how? Yes, it has a direct impact. You know, that's throwing karma. That will influence what realm our consciousness is attracted to. So again, that's why it's important when we're dying to have a virtuous state of mind, to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha when we're dying, to think, you know, generate love and compassion, bodhicitta, to think about the ultimate nature, to have some kind of virtuous mind when we're dying, because that will act as the cooperative conditions that will make a virtuous karma that we created before ripen. Okay, so it's two things. One is creating virtuous karma in our lives, and then the second is having a virtuous attitude when we're dying. And helping, if you know you're with somebody else who's dying, helping them to have a virtuous attitude. Remind them of their love and compassion, remind them of their generosity and their kindness, help them look back on their life and to rejoice at the good deeds that they did, so that they feel good about their lives, and then tell them, you know, to go forward with a heart of kindness, you know, and with confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So you can tell that to people when they're dying. And very helpful to remind them. So this question is about vegetarianism. I think I answered that before. How does the concept of each person having our own unique mind stream and karmic seeds relate to the concept of non-self? So is there still a unique self, my mind stream, versus another mind stream? Okay? So on the ultimate level, when we're examining what really is the person, yeah, are we our body? Are we our mind? Is there, are we the collection of our body and mind? Are we something separate from our body and mind? When we do that kind of ultimate analysis to find out if there's something that we can pinpoint that is who we are, yeah, when we do that, we can't find anything that is ourself. Yeah, we're not our body. Our body is just a guest house that we're staying in temporarily. Yeah, we're not our mind, because our mind is changing all the time, isn't it? Yeah, and we have so many different moods and experiences and cognitions and all these kinds of things. We can't find one state of mind that is who we are. And yet, separate from the body and mind, we also can't find a person. So when we look with ultimate analysis, we can't find any inherently existent person. But when we don't look with ultimate analysis, we talk about you're sitting there and I'm sitting here and, you know, so-and-so's walking down the street. So on a conventional level, without analysis, there's the appearance of people and we talk about people. But when we analyze to find out who the person is, then we can't find anything. Okay? So if we go back to the example of the Mississippi River, if we try and find out exactly what the Mississippi River is, we can't locate it. It's not the water, it's not the sides of the river, it's not the bottom of the river, it's not the river upstream, it's not the river downstream. So when we look, we can't find it under analysis. But when we don't analyze, there's a river. Yeah? And you better know there's a river, because if you try and walk there, you know, you need to know there's a river. Otherwise you're going to be in trouble. Okay? So, you know, in a similar way, on a conventional level, without analysis, there's different people. But when we try and find out exactly who we are, inherently some kind of intrinsic essence or soul, we can't find that. Okay? So there's no contradiction between those two. Yeah? Initially, when we hear about it, it's hard. Well, wait, you're telling me there's no self in here, you're telling me on the conventional level there is. So make up your mind. So initially, it's hard to understand, but as we think about it more and more and see things from a different perspective, we begin to see how that's possible. Okay, there's two more questions. I think we will hold those for tomorrow, because we are out of time. May I suggest that this evening, when you go home, you know, don't watch TV. Don't watch, you know, don't start texting and talking and get your senses all active. Yeah? Because you've had a fairly quiet day. You've heard a lot of material that you need to think about. So go home and kind of think about what you've heard. Apply it to your own life. And do a little bit more meditation. Same thing tomorrow before you come here. You know, do a short meditation. Reflect a little bit on the four principles of karma. Reflect on the questions from the discussion group and on the answers from the Q&A. Okay? And if you do this, then when you come in here tomorrow, your mind is quieter and more receptive, and you know, things will start to fall in place. Okay? So we'll dedicate the merit. It's important when we dedicate to really rejoice at what we've done, you know, doing something virtuous today, and what everybody here has done. So really thinking of all the people in the room, you know, and rejoicing what they've all done. Doesn't matter you know them, you don't know them. We're all a community here, and we rejoice and support each other.
Lift in the center of the way soon, obtain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow, may that born arise.